TikTok and its Chinese parent company ByteDance suing to block a law signed by President Biden. That's coming up on Business Matters. Good afternoon, and thank you so much for being here with me today. I'm your host, Don Ma. A lot to go through today, starting with markets. S&P 500 and Dow both ended higher today, and the gains today pushed the S&P 500 to a fourth straight session with a higher close. And as for the Dow here, it is now on its longest positive run since December 2023, gaining for the fifth session in a row. So the performances came despite Walt Disney slumping a bit as a surprise profit in its streaming entertainment division was eclipsed by a drop in its traditional TV business and weaker box office. We'll have more for you on that in just a moment. But first, TikTok is pushing back against the law that could ban the app in the US today. So TikTok Chinese parent company ByteDance filed a petition alleging that the law is unconstitutional. The company said that the law blocks free speech. And this comes, of course, after President Joe Biden signed the legislation last month that would ban the social media platform in the US entirely. That is, unless the company sells it to a non-Chinese entity by January 2025. And the bill passed Congress with broad bipartisan support. TikTok CEO has said the company won't sell and will fight in the courts to stay online in the U.S. In response to TikTok's lawsuit today, the chairman of the House Select Committee on China, John Molinar, says, I'll read you a quote here, Congress and the executive branch have concluded that TikTok poses a grave risk to national security and the American people. It is telling that TikTok would rather spend its time, money, and effort fighting in court than solving the problem by breaking up with the CCP. I'm confident that our legislation will be upheld. And currently, more than 170 million Americans use the app, for your information. Disney Plus is reporting its first quarterly profit since the streaming service launched in 2019. NTD's Shar Marshall has more on Disney's latest earnings.
Disney Plus is reporting its first quarterly profit ever. Though Walt Disney's surprise profit in its streaming entertainment division was overshadowed by a drop in the traditional TV business and weaker box office.
Overall, this was another impressive quarter for us, with adjusted earnings per share up 30% compared to prior year. And I'm pleased to say this outperformance raises our full-year adjusted EPS growth target to 25%. Our results were driven in large part by our experiences segment and our streaming business.
Like other media companies, Disney has been trying to adapt to consumer migration from cable television to streaming entertainment, and had promised Wall Street that its streaming operation would become profitable by September. The division has been losing money since Disney Plus debuted in 2019 in a major push by the company to compete with Netflix. The direct-to-consumer entertainment division, which includes the Disney Plus and Hulu streaming services, reported operating income of $47 million for the January-March period, compared with a loss of $587 million a year earlier.
We still expect to generate over $8 billion in free cash flow this fiscal year, and the shareholder return goals we've previously spoken about are also still very much on track. We repurchased $1 billion of stock in the second quarter. We continue to position the company for long-term growth and profitability and are making tangible progress on generating compounding earnings and free cash flow growth, which will enable us to continue returning capital to shareholders.
Revenue from a traditional television business declined 8% to $2.77 billion, and operating profit fell 22% from a year ago. Bob Iger also unveiled a 10-year, $60 billion investment in theme parks and announced plans for a standalone ESPN streaming app, among other efforts. Sean Marshall, NTD News.
And just a quick mention here, Disney stock trading at $105, down 9%, over 9% today. And for more on the earnings report, I spoke to Naveen Sharma, Media Telecom's Managing Director at S&P Global Ratings. Here's what he told me. Okay, Naveen, thank you very much for your time today. Disney earnings. So it seems like a Disney Plus turned a profit for the first time since launch here. What's the story here? Because investors seem not too, impressed by that, if you will. What's the story?
I think people should be impressed by the fact that Disney said that they were going to get to break even this year, and they've made progress towards that. You know, being the second player to get there, I think, is a good thing. It shows that the legacy media companies can get to break even and profitability. And so Disney getting to break even on Disney Plus in the quarter, I think, is a good thing for Disney and for the legacy media companies. I mean, if you go through the numbers for that segment, what you see is they grew subscribers. Part of that was from Charter, the Charter entitlement subscribers that they picked up in the quarter. That gets them to scale when they're going to advertisers and trying to sell advertising. They've got more impressions that they can sell. So that's a positive. So it shows up both on the subscription side as well as on the advertising side. And then if you look at the cost side, they've done a very good job of cost containment. And the question that they'll have to address is, as they build scale on the subscriber side, what happens to cost? Do they maintain the same level of cost, or do costs start to rise as they do additional programming or they have additional marketing? So we'll have to see how that plays out.
How much emphasis should we put on Disney's streaming side? How critical is it to its business?
Well, it's important because it's replacing what is in decline, which is linear television. I wouldn't get too carried away with kind of quarter over quarter things, because this is only a four-year-old service for Disney. They're still experimenting, and you're seeing the comment that they made about putting ESPN Plus onto the streaming platform, onto Disney as a tile within Disney Plus sometime later this year. I would view this as experimentation, and so I know we get caught up on this, but at the end of the day, we need to look at what's going on in aggregate with this company. I think my biggest takeaway from the advertising side was they showed growth on the advertising side on the streaming side. They showed growth for ESPN on the sports side, and they showed a decline on the linear TV side. But in aggregate, advertising is growing for them, and that's a good thing. That's where all of their peers need to go, and a lot of their peers haven't got there yet.
And let's touch real quick on the theme park operation here. Potentially the biggest unknown here, would you like to elaborate on that?
Sure. So we've got a number of things that could impact the theme parks, especially in the United States. We've known for a long time that consumers are under pressure, especially at the lower end, as they're working their way through their savings that they've accumulated from the pandemic. And so it's our anticipation. We've seen this on the retail side. We've seen it with consumer spending. Why it shouldn't impact Disney? People should not be surprised that it's impacting Disney as well, or it could impact Disney. So we'll see what happens in the second half of the year, where, are we seeing consumers cut back on spending because they're spending in other things, on cruise, on concerts, and so they're spending less in theme parks? Or are they cutting back on spending because they're starting to feel an impact from global economic conditions?
Okay, just one last thing. What's your outlook on Disney, and what did executives say about Marvel movies?
Sure. So, I'm a credit analyst, and so we don't have ratings on stock. We do have Disney rated an A- with a positive outlook, and that's predicated on them getting leverage down to about 2.5 times sometime late this year, probably early next year. And that would make them the highest rated legacy media company that we cover. In terms of Marvel movies, Iger talked on the call about cutting back from the pace that they had previously done to 2 to 3 movies. That's a good thing. I think it prevents franchise fatigue, and it keeps consumers interested in what's going on with their content.
Movies. Yeah, great. Great insight today, Naveen. Pleasure speaking to you as always.
Thank you very much.
Let me just quickly mention Tesla here as well, a bit of news. A sales slowdown for Tesla made in China. So this is a sharp contrast with rising EV sales of other brands in the world's largest auto market. According to the China Passenger Car Association, Tesla only sold about 62,000 China-made electric vehicles in April. And this is an 18% dip from a year earlier. Deliveries of China-made Model 3 and Model Y vehicles slid at 30% from the month before. And this is all coming as China's new energy vehicle sales jumped more than 30% in April. This includes battery-powered EVs and plug-in hybrids. CPCA data shows that sales were estimated to hit 800,000 units last month. Meanwhile, a new report finding just over a decade from now, Social Security and Medicare won't be able to fully pay benefits. And this is according to the Entitlement Programs Trustees annual report. Now, that is if Congress doesn't act fast to address the pending shortfalls. There are going to be very short of options for them here. The report says the combined Social Security trust funds are expected to be exhausted in 2035. And following that, payroll tax revenue and other income sources will only be able to cover 83% of benefits owed. Meanwhile, Medicare funds expected to be able to cover scheduled inpatient hospital benefits until 2036. In 2023, around 67 million Americans received Social Security benefits. Both President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump have promised during their campaigns to protect Social Security and Medicare. So this is, of course, a very important topic. So earlier I spoke to Brandon Arnold. He's the executive vice president at the National Taxpayers about this. It was an intriguing discussion. So have a listen to what he said. Brandon, thank you very much for your time this afternoon. How's it going?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
All right, so it looks like the combined Social Security Trust Fund about to run out, 2035, that is, and Medicare Trust Fund running out 2036. And this is after, I think, 5 years and 1 year later than projected. I mean, is this inevitable? Are we just going to face this outcome no matter what?
Yeah, the dates are going to change slightly, and a lot of that is due to just the performance of the economy. When the economy is doing well, we have more taxes flowing into these programs. It's going to extend their lifespan a little bit. But at the end of the day, we can only extend their lifespan so much. They are eventually going to go bankrupt, whether that's 9 years, 10 years, 11 years. We don't know precisely. But when that happens, we're going to have really disastrous impacts on senior citizens and on our economy at large. We could be looking at 20% cuts to Social Security benefits that kick in very, very quickly unless we take the appropriate actions right now to start fixing these programs and make them solvent.
So the problem here, I guess, is too many people taking out and not enough people contributing. Is that right?
Yeah, the problem is largely a demographic one. As the baby boomer generation gets older and shifts onto these programs, Social Security and Medicare, they're drawing down benefits at a rate that's faster than people are currently paying into them. We need more people in the workforce. We need more young people supporting these programs. But of course, that's going to take time to change the demographics of this country. In the interim, we need to make sure that these programs are issuing out the benefits that people were promised. And I think we can do that by making some common sense changes. But first, we have to muster the political courage to put these programs on the table and have Congress and other experts start to take a look and suggest changes that could make them stronger and take the pressure off of the system that is currently sending it into bankruptcy.
I mean, we've been talking about tackling this problem for a while now. It doesn't seem to be a very easy one at that. I mean, what do you propose we can do?
Yeah, I mean, I've been working on Social Security and Medicare, primarily Social Security, for more than 20 years now. I remember when George W. Bush made this one of the centerpieces of his presidency. He tried to fix Social Security. He got burned very, very badly for it. And I think people have seen that. Politicians have seen that and said, I'm just going to stay away from this. Of course, if you stay away from this problem, if we refuse to have the courage to fix these programs, it means you're going to have those abrupt cuts to Social Security and Medicare. down the road, 10 years from now, 12 years from now, what have you. So I think we need to look at a number of things. I think we need to look at adjusting the retirement age for both programs. If we increase that retirement age, not for retirees that are currently on the programs, not for near retirees that are in their 40s or 50s, but for the younger generation, we need to start to change the way these programs function to reflect the way that people operate now. People work much later in their lives than they did when these programs were created many decades ago. So we need to modernize these programs, we need to strengthen them, and we need to make sure we do so in a way that honors our promise to current retirees.
All right, let me ask you this, and it could be a touchy subject. We're talking about migration here. Millions of migrants coming into the United States. I wonder if there's any relationship between that and Social Security and Medicare, any dynamic here. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, immigration is certainly a very dicey issue, and it does impact the balance sheets of our federal programs, because you do oftentimes have people that are collecting more in the way of benefits than they're paying in the way of taxes. And when that happens, it places a strain across our government, across our federal government, including our entitlement programs. So it's a big problem. Immigration is a huge problem, obviously, and a very politically sensitive one. So that absolutely needs to be part of the conversation as we're reforming our entire federal government, but certainly our entitlement programs as well.
Well, all right, Brandon, great talking to you today.
Thanks for having me.
And coming up after the break, Apple announced new iPads with brand new features, and we're gonna give you the highlights so you don't have to watch their 40-minute presentation after the break. Welcome back, and thank you very much for sticking around. Let me just go through some quick headlines for you before we get to the Apple iPads. So crypto super PACs in the US have raised more than $100 million, and those are political groups to back congressional candidates who favor digital assets. Now, according to the report by advocacy group Public Citizen, only two other political groups have raised more money than the crypto sector in this election cycle. And disgraced former Theranos CEO Elizabeth Holmes could be free earlier than expected, according to data by the Bureau of Prisons. Her projected release date online now shows 3 months earlier than before. A new tool from OpenAI, and this one will detect images by its DALL-E 3 tool, which is a text-to-image generator. The Microsoft-backed startup made the announcement as fears rise over AI-generated content in this year's global elections. Now, Apple has unveiled its new lineup of iPad Pro and iPad Air tablets. The tech giant showed off the latest versions in a pre-recorded live-streamed event.
With these new iPads and the introduction of the powerful M4 chip, the big upgrades to Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro for iPad, along with the new Apple Pencil Pro and new Magic Keyboard, it truly is the biggest day for iPad since its introduction.
The company also introduced an all-new Apple Pencil Pro, and Apple is hoping the latest iPad lineup will breathe new life into its sluggish tablet market. The new iPad Pro's custom M4 processor provides four times the performance of existing iPad Pro models. It comes in two sizes, 11 inches and 13 inches. At 5.1 millimeters, the 11-inch is the thinnest, yet weighing less than a pound, and the iPad Air comes in an 11-inch version for $600 and a 13-inch version as well for $800. And the devices are available for pre-order starting tomorrow and will be in stores next week. So the question here is, right, should you go out and buy the new iPads? I spoke to the chief tech expert at Integral, Burton Kelso, for more. Thanks for your time today. Apple event, iPads announced. Give us your first impressions of the whole event around 40 minutes here.
Well, I think the presentation was well done, but I mean, as far as me running out to the store and getting a new iPad, last time I'm an Apple enthusiast, it's not going to really just have me standing in line at my local Apple store to get a new iPad. I think there are some great features that have been added to both the iPad Air and, of course, the iPad Pro. Like, I think storage is probably one of the big things that I would probably rush out and get an iPad Air or the iPad Pro 4, because now they're talking about they have a terabyte worth of storage on both of these devices, which in today's world is really great because more and more people are using mobile devices. And one of the biggest gripes with Apple devices is that you can't upgrade the storage in an iPad or an iPad Pro. So finally, they're going off and having it that you can start off with a lot of storage.
So you said you wouldn't exactly run out to the store to buy these new iPads. So let me ask you about the iPad Pro, because now with OLED screen, they're calling it Tandem OLED, supposed to be brighter, M4 chip, which is pretty special. I mean, they introduced the M3 just a few months ago. I mean, introducing a new chip on the iPad is pretty special here. So what do you think? Not enough to convince you to go out and buy one?
Now, with the iPad Pro reminding me of those features of the M4 chip and the fact that it's the thinnest iPad ever, you might see me stand in line for a terabyte of storage on an iPad Pro. With a thin iPad Pro with a lot of storage and an M4 chip. iPad Air, it's like, maybe, but the iPad Pro, which I think Apple's trying to get more people to buy, that definitely is a game changer. And you may see a little bit surge in the lines this year at the Apple Store or end with online sales.
Let's talk about the price here. So $999 for the 11-inch, I think, $1,299 for the 13-inch. I mean, at these prices, you could potentially get a full-fledged laptop. What's the story here? Is it worth it to get an iPad at this point?
I think it is, especially for the fact that the iPads are a little bit thinner. With more and more people traveling and people wanting to do more with lighter tech products, I think it's worth it to not have to lug something heavy around. And the power that it boasts with the M4 processor, and of course with the storage, I mean, it's something that is attractive to a lot of people, especially in this portable digital world. And Don, you have to also look at the fact that with musicians and with people creating movies, whether it be large pictures or for the small screen, iPad Pro's got a lot of features that will attract people in, say, art, music, and of course, movies.
Okay, Burton, just one final question. I'm very curious. If you have an iPad, and what do you do with it, and are you worried about BendGate?
I love that. No, I'm not really worried about BendGate, but if you've got an iPad, I mean, what can you do? You've got to upgrade those things every 5 years, so I might as well just stick with the bandwagon and go with it and just plan to replace those devices every few years.
All right. Well spoken. Thank you very much, Burton, for your time today.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. That's all the stories we have for you today. Thank you very much for watching. And if you have any feedback for the show, please feel free to let me know. You can email us at business@nt.com or leave a comment online. I do read the comments for every episode. And before we go, as I always say, business matters. See you tomorrow.